This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
This podcast is proudly sponsored by WeatherCall Services. Don't be caught off guard by severe weather. Choose WeatherCall.
Hello once again, everybody. I'm meteorologist Sean Sublett, and welcome to Across the Sky, our national Lee Enterprises weather podcast. Lee Enterprises has print and digital news operations in more than 70 locations across the country, including at my home base in Richmond, Virginia. I'm joined by my meteorologist colleagues from across the sky, Kirsten Lang in Tulsa, Joe Martucci at the Jersey Shore, and Matt Holliner in Chicago. Now that we're into March, we don't have to look a lot farther because buzz continues to rapidly build about the upcoming total solar eclipse. It's less than a month away on Monday, April 8th. This is going to be the first one to cross the United States since 2017 and the last one until 2045. I do want to go around the horn and get a couple of eclipse stories. Let's go ahead and go with you first, Kirsten. What is your eclipse story from 2017?
We chose to have a vacation that year, and we traveled all the way towards the equator. So I was nowhere near the area. But the one that I remember was when I was actually younger in elementary school in the 90s. And it was an annual eclipse. It was not, of course, total. And, I remember making the pinhole project that we'll talk about here in just a bit with Tony when we come back on with him. But that's the one that sticks in my mind. It is not the same as what we were going to be having coming up, next month. From hearing y'all stories, it sounds like the one coming up next month is much cooler. And now I will tell you, I have a little bit of FOMO because I wish that I was traveling down to Texas to see this next month, but I'm not. And I really wish I was. I guess I have to wait now until I'm, 21 years older than this to maybe make those plans again.
Well, I am planning on seeing the one this year because I did get in the path of totality in 2017. And absolutely incredible. And we get into that on this podcast. Trying to describe it is very difficult. The best thing I've come up with is it is truly, and I mean truly, a jaw-dropping experience. Because my jaw did drop when totality occurred. Again, leading up to it, I was starting to wonder, because I was like, this isn't that impressive yet. It's like, yeah, it's getting a little bit darker. You got the eclipse glasses on. It's like, oh yeah, it looks impressive, but then you take the eclipse glasses off, it's like, what's the big deal? But when it happens, when totality happens, and again, I'm excited about this one because it's going to last longer. It was only about 2.5 minutes. I saw it. I was living in Cincinnati at the time. Cincinnati was not in the path of totality. I had to drive down south into Kentucky to get into the path. But when totality occurred, it was just incredible. Suddenly, I was not disappointed at all. It was just truly incredible to see suddenly an instantaneous sunset. And we talked about this in the podcast too, like somebody flipped a switch and suddenly the sun set. Again, it's tough to describe because normally sunset happens over a period of time, but this was an instant sunset and it wasn't completely dark. I do want to stress that to people. It's not completely dark, but it's like those twilight hours. In an instant rather than over a long period of time. And the temperature does drop like the temperature is at twilight. And then just on the other side, how quickly it warms back up and how quickly it brightens. But to look at the sun, this white glow around the sun, the sun's corona, it is just incredible. So there's a reason I'm getting in the path again. And hopefully what I've just said is encouraging you, if you're on the fence about, should I get in the path for this one or not? Do it. If you possibly can, take a day off work and get in the path of totality. You will not be disappointed.
Well, I don't know if I have that great of a story, but I do remember the eclipse in 2017. I was at my last job in Northwest New Jersey, shout out Hackettstown. And it was about seven. I just looked it up, 72% totality. So, you know, and I think we'll get into this during the podcast. Like, it's just not the same if you're not in totality. It was cool. It got a little bit darker out, but it was still fairly bright. But what I do remember was looking at a animated GIF of the satellite across the United States and seeing that dark spot move across the country for those couple of hours. And you even saw the clouds, the what we call convective clouds or cumulonimbus clouds, thunderstorm clouds, fizzle away because its power source, the sun, was gone for a little bit. So I don't, you know, the experience I had in 2017, it was fine. I'm glad I was outside for it. But I remember just seeing some of the images, you know, the satellite images and what happened as a result of it. That was interesting. This year, I am happy because we are about 92% of totality. So getting closer, thinking about taking a drive over to upstate New York, but it gets awfully cloudy in early April. So it might just be best to sit at home and shave off those 8% points or whatever from totality.
Yeah, we'll talk with Tony about that. Our guest is going to be Tony Rice. He's our favorite guy. We go to about all things astronomy and space weather. In addition to the science outreach that he does, he works in security software systems at his base of operations there in Raleigh, Durham, area of North Carolina. Great to have him back on the podcast. We're going to tackle all that and more when we come back with our Across the Sky podcast with Tony Rice. So, Tony, I want to start with this point. There, those of us of a certain age, it seems like the 2017 eclipse was very recent. And I suppose it's because it was such a long time before we had one ahead of that. I think it was like the 70s, another couple of smaller ones or partial ones in the 80s, if I recall. Can you take us back through that history a little bit?
So we should definitely talk about total versus annular eclipses. But if we're talking totality, which is what we saw in 2017, you got to go back to February of 1979 before you see a total solar eclipse path even touch the United States. And before that, it was 1970. So it's been a good long time, before 2017. And that's why it was called the Great American Eclipse. So many people got to see that one. And when you talk about annular eclipses, we just had one back in... I guess it was October of last year. Those we see a little more frequently. Back 2012, we saw that one. It was back in the early and mid 90s on that one. But still, these things are pretty far spaced out. They happen about every 2.5 years somewhere on the planet. But you know, this is a very localized event. You've got to be in the path in order to really experience it. And we only see that path come through our neck of the woods. Every couple of decades.
So yeah, talk through the difference between an annular, which sounds too much like annual, versus a regular partial and a total, just so everybody can get those names in place.
Absolutely. So it's all driven by the moon's orbit. So the moon's orbit is not completely circular. So as a result, sometimes it's a little bit closer, sometimes it's a little bit farther away. When the moon passes in front of the sun, which is what creates a solar eclipse, if it happens at a point in its orbit where it's close enough, we all learned from Grover back in Sesame Street days that things that are near are bigger and things that are far are a little bit smarter, farther away. If it happens at that point in its orbit where it's closer, it's going to appear bigger in the sky. The moon's big enough to completely cover the disk of the sun, and we get a total eclipse. The photosphere, the brightest part of the sun, is completely covered up by the moon, and we get to see the corona, the outer atmosphere of the sun, which is actually hotter than the surface of the sun. There's so very much we don't know about the sun, and that's why eclipses are fascinating, just not just as an event to go out and see, but scientifically, they're very, very important as well. Now, an annular eclipse is the other major type of what we saw in annular back here just in 2023. That comes from the Greek word annulus, or ring. And that's because they occur when the moon is a little bit farther away and therefore smaller in the sky. and not quite large enough to leave or to completely cover the disk of the sun, and leaves that ring. You know, Johnny Cash taught us about the ring of fire. That's what's left behind. It's important to note that is technically a partial eclipse. The moon isn't completely so covering it, and therefore you need some eye protection. I'm sure we'll talk about that. I won't let us get away without talking about some eye protection as well. There is one third type of eclipse, and these are really, really rare, a hybrid eclipse. And that happens right on the nice edge of too far away and too close. So those will actually begin as an annular and become total by the end of the path, or vice versa. And we had one of those first part of last year that went across the northwestern tip of Australia. Really, really rare eclipse.
And Tony, I wonder if you can describe for people in the path of totality what it's like, because I've tried to do it, because I did get in the path of totality for the 2017 eclipse, and it's hard to describe without using many adjectives: incredible, awesome, amazing.
Yeah, you're giving me the hard job here. It is close to impossible to describe. And I can describe the science of it all day long. I can explain, the numbers of how temperatures go up and down, and how quickly that happens, how amazing that is, and how dark it gets, and how beautiful the corona is. I can describe all those little bits and pieces, attributes of the eclipse, and it really doesn't begin to describe the experience. So that's the thing that you got to focus on here, is the experience. Being in that path of totality versus being, if you're, literally a mile outside of that path, I hate to say it, but the difference is night and day. You really get a sense of our place in the sun, moon, earth system. And you get a sense of how unique where we live is. This is the only sun, moon, earth system, the only sun, moon, planet system that we know of in the universe right now, where we can see something like this. Yes, moons eclipse suns on other planets all the time. And, there's over 1,000 exoplanets that we know of at this point. Instruments like the Hubble Space Telescope and then the James Webb Space Telescope has really increased our ability to go and find those exoplanets. So we know more about those systems. Ours is the only one that has a moon that is just the right size and just the right distance from a sun to be able to create the kind of experience that we see there. So you get a sense of your place there. And the other thing that you get a sense of, and we're talking about this a little bit when we first joined, is just how incredibly bright the sun is. And if you're blessed with good weather on that day, you'll really get a sense of it. When you got nice clear skies, those severe clear days that the pilots talk about, when the moon moves in front of the sun completely and that period of totality begins, it's like a light switch was turned out. And yes, you can walk outside when it's dark out at night and you're in the environment of it being dark, but sunset takes half hour, 45 minutes, an hour. And, it's like the boiled frog. You don't notice how bright the sun is because it takes so long for it to happen. But it's the sun literally winks out, and it is literally impossible to describe. So I attended a workshop a year or two ago on this topic. They were desperately trying to come up with ways for authors and others to describe this and try and sell this as you shouldn't miss this. If you got the opportunity to get the path of totality, you absolutely should. And one of the phrases they kept using over and over was the eclipse happens above you, obviously. It also happens above you in the atmosphere. There's lots of changes that are going on in the atmosphere, but it also happens inside of you. And if depending how touchy-feely you are, that may not resonate with you, but you will, if you have the opportunity to get into the path of totality and experience this, you will absolutely agree with that statement afterwards, I guarantee.
So you briefly said this, but what kind of temperature drop do you look at in that amount of time, and how long does it last before then becoming bright again?
So there were some studies during the 2017 eclipse where they were looking specifically at this in the path of totality, And I don't remember the numbers off the top of my head. It's in the low double digits, I believe. But it is definitely noticeable sitting there, you know, standing there in the path. And you've also got to remember that what you're actually feeling there, what you're actually seeing, is the moon shadow traveling across the surface of the Earth. So the leading edge of that shadow is actually rounded. And if you go back and look at some of the data from 2017 and even earlier eclipses, we've got plenty of mesonets scattering all over the country. So there's lots of data to pull from. It's really fun to see those numbers drop and be able to look at that rounded leading edge of that shadow moving across the surface of the Earth. Also worth pointing out that if you are high enough, and a friend of mine watched the 2017 eclipse from the top of Clingman's Dome, the highest point along the Appalachians there in the Smoky Mountains, and was able to see a 360-degree sunset around them and saw that circular shadow moving towards them. That's something you only really see if you're up high enough, but a pretty amazing sight.
And Tony, coming back to the path of totality and how important it is, I am a little bit concerned because you talked about how a mile can make a difference in the experience you're going to have. If you want the experience that we've just been talking about, this incredible experience, you have to be in the path. And so I'm worried for places that are right on the edge, like San Antonio. I'm worried that some people don't understand how important the path of totality is. And if you're in it or not, you have to make sure you're actually in the part of your city or your area that's in the path. Because if you're not...
Yeah, it's critical to know where that path is. If you're close isn't good enough here. This is really a binary experience. You're only going to see the total eclipse if you are in that path. So San Antonio is a good example that, you know, kind of slices through there. 90%, 95%, 99% isn't good enough. And, you know, unless you absolutely cannot move from the spot you're in and 99% totality, absolutely get into 100%. The difference is really, really big. And we should talk about your positioning within that path as well. The path here is, I'd have to look it up. I want to say it's 50, 60 miles wide. Let me look that up before we get off here, because that's important. Where you position yourself laterally across that path is really, really important. And the best way to describe that is picture a round cake. You know, somebody hands you a knife and says, you can cut yourself a thin slice of cake. Where are you going to place that knife? You're going to place it on the edge and cut yourself a little sliver. Or you're going to put it right there in the middle and try and cut yourself the biggest slice of thin cake that you can. You're going to put it in the middle. The same is true of the eclipse, because again, this is a circle that actually ends up being more of an elongated circle, an oval, as the moon's shadow is cast across the surface of the Earth. This is a circle moving across the path. So if you're all the way over on that edge, if you move from 99% to, you know, you can literally go over a neighborhood, a couple of blocks, and be in 100%. But there, the period of totality, the amount of time that shadow spins moving over you, can be seconds long there. And this is a great eclipse. The 2024 eclipse is going to be even better than 2017. Because 2017, we're talking two and a half minutes of totality, maximum. Here, we're talking four. So if you get to that center line as close as possible to it, and that's what the eclipse chasers really try to optimize. They want to be in the place where there's going to be the least clouds threatening you, and they want to be as close to that center line as possible. That's going to maximize your experience. But yeah, absolutely know where that path is and make sure you're at least inside of it and preferably close to the center line.
So even within the path of totality, trying to get to the center of the path is ideal, because that's where you'll have the longest period experiencing the eclipse, rather than being on the edges of the path. You have to be in the path, but the closer to the center of the path, the better. But even within the path itself, are there any places that are going to be a difference in the amount of time? We know you're going to be in the eclipse longer if you're in the center of the path, but going from south to north, is there a difference in the time of how long you'll experience the eclipse going from Texas, say, up to Maine? Is there going to be a difference in the time that way, or does it not change?
Yeah, that's a good question. And every eclipse is going to have a point of greatest eclipse. And that's going to be where the width of the path is the width of the shadow, I should say, is the longest or is the widest. And it's going to maximize that period of totality. And Eclipse fans will aim for that to try and maximize their experience as well. I wouldn't focus so much on that because the difference between viewing it in Texas versus Maine, for example, as far as how long the period of totality is going to last, is really negligible when you compare it to the risk of clouds. And that's where I look to you guys as the experts. So what is your advice on, I'll tell you where I'm going, because I'm sure that question is coming up, and you can tell me whether I've made the right choice or not. Based on the climatology of that time of year, where is the least risk of cloudiness? Because that's the natural enemy of solar eclipses.
Okay, early April, so that's early spring, and the path of this is Texas up to New England, and it goes Ohio Valley and into the northern Appalachians. But that's upwind of the Appalachians and a lot of the path, which can be cloudy that time of year. I mean, the air is still very cold aloft, 10 to 15,000 feet up. So it can be cloudier. The problem is on any given day, you don't know. All you can think of about, this is where you do climatology. What does it tend to be at a certain time of year? So for me, I would think the place to go was Oklahoma or Texas or Arkansas. I don't have the path in front of me right now, but that part of the path, I feel like going to Buffalo or, any of those places immediately upwind of the Appalachians or into New England is a lot more of a risk. Like, for example, even for the 17 event, I drove down to Charlotte and then waited until I got up in the morning in Charlotte to decide, am I going to go down to Columbia or am I going to go to Greenville? Because both places were going to be totality. But it was one of those things like, I want to be sure there's no cloud cover in the way. So I got myself in a position to go one or two directions very first thing in the morning in a couple of hours. And Columbia was the way to go for that. So where are you going, Tony, or have you even decided yet?
Oh, I booked my my hotel about a year and a half ago, and the rate I got reflects it. You won't be getting that rate in the place south of Dallas that I'm aiming for. You won't get that rate anymore. So I'm going to adopt the same approach that you did, and this is what I've learned from eclipse hunters that take this a lot more seriously, is you position yourself kind of in the middle of three places. And you chose Charlotte. I'm choosing south of Dallas to do that. And that gives me the flexibility to move to Waco if I need to, or north a little bit more closer to Dallas. And it's totally based on cloud cover. So we'll get up that morning. We'll look at what the forecasts look like. Everybody, all my meteorology friends were telling me that Texas, Oklahoma, Arkansas was going to be my move. I personally chose Texas, Central Texas, because it is so flat and because it gives us some flexibility to be able to see something coming before and be able to react to it a little bit earlier. I was talking with a meteorologist in Greensboro, North Carolina yesterday, and he was telling me a story of the 2017 eclipse. He stayed there in Greensboro for that eclipse, and there was a single, maybe 5 mile wide rain cloud, just nice, thick, opaque cloud that moved in out of nowhere right before the best part of the eclipse. And they got on air and told folks, all you got to do is go like 10 miles or so south of the city and you're going to be able to see it. So being able to watch the atmosphere and react to it immediately, I think it's going to be a big benefit. But I like your idea of giving yourself some flexibility, picking a couple of places to go with traffic as a consideration as well. You don't know if you're actually going to be able to make it there or not with the traffic, but making that final game day call that morning.
Yeah, we'll talk more about logistics and of course safety on viewing an eclipse after we take a little bit of a break. But we'll be right back with Tony Rice talking more about the 2024 April 8th total solar eclipse after a quick break. We'll be right back with the Across the Sky podcast.
This podcast is proudly sponsored by Weather Call Services. Don't be caught off guard by severe weather. Choose Weather Call. Receive precise, location-specific alerts via phone, text, or email. With over a decade of experience, Weather Call delivers pinpoint accuracy for your exact address, ensuring no surprises. Take charge and stay prepared when ominous skies loom. Explore the Weather Call difference today. Visit weathercallservices.com/lee-enterprises and safeguard yourself, your business, or any school that matters to you. That's weathercallservices.com/lee-enterprises. You can also find the link in our show notes.
And we're back on the Across the Sky podcast talking with Tony Rice, our favorite NASA ambassador, gearing up for the April 8th, 2024 total solar eclipse, first one since 2017, last one at least fully visible in the States until 2045. So, Tony, always good to remind people the obvious, but sometimes it's just obvious to us, about the safety protocols when viewing a solar eclipse. You never look at the sun directly, even when it's partially eclipsed. Even if it's still 95% eclipsed, the thing is bright. So remind people some of the safety precautions and alternate ways to view this event.
So the only time you can view this eclipse without glasses is during totality. So you've got to be in the path of totality. And during that 4 minute or so period when the moon is completely in front of the sun. And there's even a period, you know, right before totality, we call it Bailey's beads, when the last couple of bits of sunlight are coming through the valleys on the moon and around the mountains and things like that. We forget that the moon is not smooth. So you'll see those last little bits of light coming through. You've got to have your glasses on during that as well. Any time other than when the moon is completely in front of the sun, this is a partial eclipse. Even in the path of totality, you're going to see a lot more minutes of a partial eclipse than you will a total eclipse. So you need to have some eye protection. The eye protection that comes to mind immediately is the cardboard solar eclipse glasses. Those are great. If you don't already have some, I'd recommend you go ahead and get them. We saw a lot of drama back in 2017 with availability of those glasses. We even saw some drama with some fake glasses being put out there. And the problem was there were some knockoffs that were being created that didn't provide the level of eye protection that they needed. These aren't sunglasses. It's worth pointing out that sunglasses aren't good enough here. You have to have some proper glasses that are blocking not only the visible light that we see when we go around and look, but on the either ends of that spectrum too, especially the infrared light. And proper approved solar eclipse glasses are going to do that for you. So let's talk about what's proper and approved. We thought we had this nailed down back in 2017 when there was an ISO certification we could point to. And I'd have to look it up. I believe it's, there it is, ISO 12312-2. And you would see that stamped on glasses. We thought we had this licked. We could point people to that and say, this is what the certification looks like. Look for it on your glasses. Well, soon after that, some manufacturers just started stamping that on their glasses. So that's not even good enough anymore to know that they're safe. So my best advice there is to go to eclipse.aaa.org and you'll see there's an eye safety section there. It stands for the American Astronomical Society. And this is what NASA will send you to as well. And their approach there is to look to some reputable dealers. I wouldn't go on walmart.com. I wouldn't go on Amazon.com because you just don't know where those are coming from. Anybody can go and sell things there. But that list of reputable dealers has been vetted by the American Astronomical Society, and they know that they're producing safe glasses there. But let's talk a bit about if you can't get a hold of those glasses. There is, if you're a welder and have a welder's helmet, that'll work. But again, go on the AAS website to tell you what grade of welding glass you need to use. I don't know about you, but I don't have a welder in the garage. So if I didn't have glasses, I got a stack of them here. I'll be giving them out all the way between here and Texas at every Bucky's and any other place I can find to hand them out to people. So to make sure that they get the opportunity to see this too. But if you don't have an opportunity to do that, you can create yourself a pinhole camera. And it is as simple, really, as poking a hole in a sheet of paper, thick paper, so it's going to provide some shade, but that's going to project the eclipse onto, you know, perhaps another sheet of paper, and you'll be able to see it. You'll be able to see that partial eclipse. There's an activity you can do. This is great to do with kids, where you take a cereal box, you cut the top off, leaving the center part, but cut two holes on either side. One hole that you look through, the other hole you cover with a piece of tinfoil, and simply poke a pinhole in it. And the smaller the hole and the cleaner that hole is, the better of an image you're going to be. Put a little piece of paper in the bottom and you just cover it up. You get a nice dark environment to be able to see that eclipse really well. You'll actually see little eclipses filtered through the trees. That creates a bit of a pinhole camera as well. One of my favorite things to do is bring a spaghetti colander out and hold that up, and you will see dozens and dozens of little eclipses there. When I saw the eclipse in South Carolina, I was at a state park there, Santee State Park. It was where the center line crossed I-95. And there was an artist who brought a bunch of canvases and some charcoals. And she was sitting beneath the trees throughout the period of the partial eclipse, sketching those little half moons is what they ended up looking like of the eclipse. But you need to have some way of safely viewing the eclipse. And if you can get the eclipse glasses, great. If not, there's some other things you can do. Also worth pointing out, if you have your eclipse glasses from 2017, the modern films that they use now, they don't degrade the way the old ones did. So some of them mentioned that you have to throw them away after a year. Not really a big deal. Do test them, hold them up to a bright light at home, and then take them out. Look at the sun now. We're seeing a lot of sunspots, you know, many, many, many times bigger than our planet, that are actually visible with the naked eye if you go out and test your solar eclipse glasses now before the big day in April.
And Tony, coming back to those eclipse glasses, do you know of any places where you can get the real deal, not the fake ones, for free? And second, if you're not getting them for free somewhere, what's a reasonable price people should pay for these things? Like, what should they cost? Because I imagine the cost is going to be jacked up, especially the week before the eclipse. You're going to see some ridiculous prices online. So how much should people really be willing to pay for these eclipse glasses? What is a reasonable price? But first off, though, can you get them anywhere for free? The real thing for free somewhere?
I know that there are some events that will have them available. If I weren't going to Texas, the place that I would go to see this eclipse is actually one of the riskier ones, cloud-wise, but the experience sounds amazing to me. And that would be the Cleveland Guardians opening day. My understanding is they bought 45,000 some pairs of eclipse glasses. So that would be a pretty good way to get a free set of glasses. But yeah, you're right that the glasses might get expensive here really quickly. And that's another reason to get them now instead of later. Honestly, where you're probably going to get, you know, fleece, for lack of a better word, between now and then, is if you wait too long by the shipping. If you have to overnight these things, it's going to get really, really expensive. So let me just bring up some of those approved ones and see if they've got some prices on them. I hesitate to give any numbers without okay, here we go. Eclipse glasses. Let's go with those. They get cheaper the more of them you buy. And some of these, they're going to insist that you buy 10, 15, 20 at a time. In those kind of bulks, we're talking less than $3 a piece. Should also point out that the cardboard ones are great, but they make some that have, that are more like cheap sunglasses that have plastic frames. They're really, really comfortable to wear. I've got a couple of those, and I use those to go out and look at sunspots too.
Yeah, so don't pay ridiculous amounts for these things. There's a reason that some places are giving them away for free, like the Cleveland Guardians, because they shouldn't cost that much. But I imagine we are going to see some ridiculous prices showing up online. So,
yeah, so sub $5 is probably reasonable. Here's a 10 pack for $40 if you've got a family.
So I think we talked about this earlier, but in case people are listening and they didn't catch it or they don't know, can you let them know when the next one will be if they can't make it out in the path of totality this year?
Right. So the next one that will touch the continental United States is in 2044. But that one is, going to be limited. That's mostly going across Canada. Alberta, Canada is going to see quite a bit of it, but it's going to be limited to Montana and North Dakota. So I don't know if that one counts or not. Certainly counts if you're up there. But a lot more cattle are going to see that than people, I believe. So the next one that is going to stretch coast to coast will start in Northern California in August of 2045. It's going to stretch across Nevada and Utah and Colorado, Oklahoma. There's a point in Arkansas where the 2044 and the 2045 will cross. So that you're kind of lucky if you're there. And that one's going to exit out over Florida. It's actually going to touch just about all of Florida, only Jacksonville and extreme southern Florida down in Miami. Will it not pass through there? I think it's going to be kind of interesting to see the images that come back from that 2045 eclipse from Disney World, because that particular eclipse is going to pass right over Orlando.
And you mentioned that you went to the one in 2017. So for those who don't live anywhere near this and really have no idea what kind of buzz this brings, both you and Matt were talking about the traffic jams that you guys kind of went through. Can you explain what that is like as well? Because I'll just real quickly, I'll tell you too, I have family like Matt that lives right around San Antonio, just outside of San Antonio. One in particular is in a ranch just outside of San Antonio, Texas. And they've been telling everybody, you know, make sure your gas tanks are full before, because they may be depleting you of gasoline in that area. You know, we've listened to some people talk about how sometimes trash is left over too. You know, these are things you don't really think about either. So can you explain what that was like? And if you saw anything like that when you were there in 2017?
Absolutely did. The way to think of it is it's like a college football game. People tend to arrive over several hours. Actually, with this, they're going to arrive over a couple of days. And that's what my family did. Is we got there the day before. We planned on not leaving until the day after. And I was still running into traffic the day after on I-95, trying to get back to North Carolina. The state park that we stayed in, I rented a cabin there, was right next to I-95. And it was about midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning, before I could get a cell signal because of the parking lot that was I-95. There's an animated GIF of Google traffic in 2017 that does not show the path of the eclipse at all. It just shows the red, green, yellow of the traffic maps. You can see when the moon's shadow moves through those areas as the roads around it, you know, kind of bleed red as the traffic really starts to get worse and worse. You could be sitting on some of those major interstates for hours at a time. So having a full gas tank, you know, filling it up the day before is absolutely a good idea. I would not try to travel on the day of. I would not try to travel anywhere but, you know, back to somewhere where you can lay your head at night that day, just because the traffic is going to be so bad. And I compare it to a college football game because, again, people are arriving over a larger stretch of time. But when it's over, when that totality is over, everybody leaves at once. They all want to get on the road. So I would avoid that. I'm thinking back to some of the preparations that were made for 2017, particularly in South Carolina. There was a little community along the coast of South Carolina. The name escapes me, but they had like one volunteer fire department and one fire truck and one ambulance. And they were pretty worried that people were going to inundate their town. And they pointed out they don't even have the sewer and water system to support lots and lots of visitors. So these kind of things concern them. They were worried about public safety there. And it was the last spot on the continental United States where the 2017 eclipse could be seen. So they were worried people were going to show up. Thankfully, they stayed away. It didn't cause the community too much problem. But that's worth pointing out here. Is, you know, remember, we're guests wherever we're going to see this eclipse. Respect people's property and know that you're going to be going in a place where there's going to be a lot of people there that aren't normally there. So drivers do stupid things, and you know, maybe some of the services are not going to be able to support you, either emergency services or even something as simple as food and gas. So go prepared.
And again, still hitting on this logistics thing, is there any buzz that you're hearing about places where it's people are thinking the traffic is going to be extra bad? Because I imagine some people are weighing that into their decision. Now, we talked about trying to be in this, making sure you're in the path and making sure you're in the center of path and factoring in the cloud cover. But do you have to factor in the traffic too? Should you that play into your decision? Is there a certain part of the country where the traffic could be worse than others? And maybe is it worth going to a more rural area in the path versus a bigger city? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think more rural areas are probably going to be a little bit easier to navigate as far as traffic is concerned. But there's more events closer into where the people are. So look for events. You know, don't just try to do this all on your own. Some of them are ticketed events, but you'll have parking and you'll have bathrooms and things like that, which is, my wife assures me, is something that I absolutely must remember when I'm planning all of these excursions. So look for events that are sponsored by local municipalities. NASA's got a couple events that it's working with science centers and things like that. That's a good place to go. And then you've got some support there. And often they'll have glasses available to not speakers and things like that. So you can learn a little bit more about the heliophysics and some of the solar science. The thought has crossed my mind going to Texas that need to be particularly careful in the rural areas. And not make any assumptions about pulling off on the side of the road or, getting on people's land. We need to be respectful of that.
What did we learn from that, either science or logistics? In other words, how people reacted during the eclipse, whether that's logistics or...
So science-wise, it's a rare opportunity to view the sun's corona. And oddly enough, the sun is the thing in our solar system we know the least about. That's improving. There's plenty of heliophysics missions out there that are looking at the sun 24/7. And each one of those actually create what's called an artificial eclipse by placing something that blocks the brightest part of the sun in front of those cameras or those telescopes so that they can view the sun's corona at all times. But the technology that we can put up on those instruments, up on those probes, is limited. Having the ability to look at the sun's corona during a total solar eclipse using earthbound telescopes and the resolution, the technology that's available there, is a really rare opportunity, again, to study the corona. We learn so much about space weather. We learn so much about understanding what coronal mass ejections, how to predict those, and keep the Earth safe from all that energy that gets tossed at us a couple of times a year. And we're nearing solar maximum now. The sun ebbs and flows in the number of sunspots and therefore the number of CMEs and other things like that it's lobbing our way. So it's a great opportunity to learn things about that. If you look back at the history of solar eclipses, there was an experiment called the editing experiment where scientists called Eddington placed two teams, one in South America and one in Africa, to watch the solar eclipse and basically look for starlight to be bent around the sun. We were able to see stars that were hidden behind the sun at that time because of the bending of space-time. And this contributed to proving Einstein's theory of general relativity. So there's big, big science that can come out of this. You also asked about logistics. I'm 2017, I sat in some meetings with North Carolina Emergency Management, where we were talking through some of the preparations there. And I think what they learned there was you really can't over-prepare. There was lots of highway signs that were up. The temporary highway signs went up weeks before the eclipse, letting people know that this was happening, that people might be pulling off to the side of the road. Don't do that. Learn that over-preparing at a state level really isn't possible. So back to the earlier question about how you can prepare personally, I think that's the lesson learned there as well. Go with that full gas tank. Be prepared not to be able to get services like food and water and gas for some period of time.
Yeah, always good to prepare for the worst and hope for the best, as
Exactly.
I've always been taught.
Don't want to discourage anybody from going out there and seeing it, but you just got to be realistic about having a lot of people who don't normally do something like this on the road at once.
Right. All right. So where can people go online to learn more in these last few weeks? I'm sure NASA has at least one website with all the details that people need. What's the best place for people to go find out?
So I mentioned the AAS website, eclipse.aas.org, and that's a great website for some of that safety information. And then the NASA Eclipse website, which is eclipse.nasa.gov, has a great set of information that's available to you there, and also has some instructions on building some of those pinhole projectors that we talked about. That's a great thing to do with your kids, you know, whether you got the glasses or not. Those are two really good resources that you can use to even to get the timings of the eclipse, when the partial begins, if you're lucky enough to be in the path of totality, when that's going to begin and end, and even do some planning on when and where you might be able to see this eclipse.
All right, real quick before we let you go, where can people follow you on social media so they can see cool pictures that you take during this eclipse?
Yeah, I'm definitely planning on taking my camera. I don't think I'm going to pack my telescope this time. I got too good of pictures with just a camera last time. But I'm at RTP, H-O-K-I-E, RTP Hokie. I'm a proud Virginia Tech graduate on both Instagram and on Twitter.
Thank you so much for taking the time with us, Tony. Safe travels to Texas, and looking forward to talking with you again soon.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll be back with a few closing thoughts on the Across the Sky podcast.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Love having Tony on the podcast. Love talking about the eclipse. You know, we've talked so much about how difficult it is to describe what you see, because it's something that you might see once or twice in your life. I remember I was in Columbia, South Carolina, looking up and thinking when it was in totality, right? For these 2 to 3 minutes, it was in totality, thinking, I can understand why people 500 and 600 years ago just freaked out when they saw this, to just look up in the sky and there's a big black circle hovering over you in the sky. And yes, it's kind of shiny around the circle, but everything is twilight. But that was the thing I took home. I had seen pictures of it. I had seen video, but to be standing on the ground, looking up in the sky and seeing a big black circle where the sun is otherwise supposed to be, that can shake you up if you don't know what's going on. So that's one of the things that I kind of took home from it, in terms of, I don't want to say I was surprised, but just that whole feeling of what you're seeing, how is it different than how you might have thought it was going to be? Yeah, just looking up at the sky and seeing a big black circle, that could kind of freak you out if you don't know what's going on.
No, that's a great point, Sean. If you didn't know it was coming, it would be terrifying for this just to suddenly occur. What in the world is going on? I can imagine like how there would be stories that would be passed down for generations about this terrifying event that happened once when the sun disappeared. But that's how impressive it is. What I experienced in 2017, even if I wasn't going to experience
like
it
I said,
this
I
year,
have FOMO because I wanted to
it's
see
something
it,
I'll never
but I don't think I'm going to make my way down there yet this year. So Matt, I'll be waiting to hear your story again and see your pictures.
I'll definitely be taking pictures. I mean, again, the pictures don't do it justice, but I'll do the best I can. I will definitely share some pictures.
We should have petitioned for like a group field trip to Texas for the eclipse. Think of all the content possibilities. Possibilities would have been endless.
And we got a free place to stay, too.
That's true. Two free places to stay. That's great. Beautiful Man. Thing. Go to Bucky's.
We could just make a whole thing of it. A whole thing.
Joe, you can wear your cowboy hat.
Well, that's very true. I mean, you know, it is ready. It is from Austin, Texas. So, you know, it's legit enough. I think I'd fit in. I'm down.
Wherever you go to see the eclipse, we hope that the sky stays clear. You get the best view possible. With that, we'll shut down for this week. But the coming weeks, you know, now that we're really getting into spring, we're going to have the top 10 things to know about spring. We're going to have our friend Teresa Crimmins back on the podcast to talk about the status of spring and how things are pollinating. Chris Fogaski is probably going to be joining us in a few weeks to talk all about lightning. And we've got another colleague of mine from Dominion Energy here in Richmond is going to talk about what you need to know about weather and energy and the power grid, all that kind of stuff. So lots more coming up in the weeks to come. For meteorologist Matt Holliner, Kirsten Lang, and Joe Martucci, I'm Sean Sublett in Richmond, Virginia. Thanks for listening, and we will talk to you next time on the Across the Sky podcast.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.